Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the December 11 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with our panelists, including Matt Bennett of Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities from Newmarket, Indiana, and Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Let's make our list to start the program. We'll begin with you from Channel Seeds in Windsor, Illinois, Matt Bennett.
Well, I think maybe talk just a little bit about what everybody's opinion on the direction of exports. Obviously, beans were still, you know, pretty strong today, yet a little less than what they've been here lately. And then corn seems to be staying pretty steady. So I guess it appears to me we're, as usual, maybe going to be switching a little bit from beans over to corn. Just wondering how everybody feels that's going to play out, maybe in comparison to what the yearly estimate is for from the USDA. And then I always like talking about new crops. So talking about everybody's ideas on how they're going to approach this. Obviously, the rally we got here in the last couple months was probably a little bit different than what a lot of us were expecting. So how we're going to maybe adjust our mentality moving forward.
And Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities, your thoughts?
Well, I think, you know, maybe we need to, you know, discuss a little bit whether we think the Chinese are actually going to take off the MIR-162 or if they're going to take many DDGs from the U.S.
Okay, and Kurt Kimmel.
I like the idea of maybe visiting a little bit about producers' expectations going into 2015, just like Matt mentioned there. There's some ideas of, some more bean acres versus corn, and especially on corn ground.
Okay, let's start with the old crop first, and then we'll move back to the new crop. Of course, the United States Department of Agriculture managed to release a WASDE figure on Tuesday of this week. That's the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates, and it now shows ending stocks for corn below 2 billion bushels. What did you make of that number, and will it continue to drop when we get to the January final crop production figures? What do you think, Matt Bennett?
Well, you know, I have to think that the way things sit right now, it would appear that it would continue to drop. Now, I know there's still some questions out there about total production. You know, there's been people that feel like maybe acreage might be a touch rich still. I don't know. It's tough to tell whether that could be adjusted anymore or not. That's open to anybody's interpretation. But looking at it from the demand side, you know, read a good article from FarmDoc today that's definitely questioning, you know, how we're going to move forward as far as ethanol goes with $60 crude oil. And I think that's something that remains to be seen, but it's something we're going to have to keep an eye on. But again, this week, you know, it's 3 weeks in a row we've went over 100 million bushels ground for ethanol. And so obviously with ethanol, things are going very well from a usage standpoint. Whenever you look at export market, as I said, it seems to be really building steam. And then, you know, everyone in the livestock sector is making money. And so I don't think we're going to see any constriction from what our current estimates are as far as livestock and feeding goes.
Kurt Kimmel, your view of that sub 2 billion bushel carryout number for corn?
Well, the bull's looking at less acres as we go into the January report. But, you know, we could probably go down to 1.8, but that still signifies we have ample supply. The question area is exports. You know, we need to see some confirmation of good export shipments as we get into the first quarter of 2015. Then the miscellaneous category, feed use. You know, feed use is whenever you have big crops, you got big feed use. Whenever you have small crops, you have small feed use. But true feed usage would be a question. And a lot of that's going to dictate on, you know, this weather this winter and rate of gains and so forth. So there's some moving parts to the corn supply demand balance sheet, but when you look at the big picture in here, I don't think we're going to drop down to 1 billion bushels or anything like that.
The other thing that will come out on the 12th day of January, along with the updated crop production and final numbers for it and the WASDE report, will be the grain stocks report, Kurt Kimmel, and that will point to how much feed usage has been happening in the first quarter. Do you think that the strong basis levels suggest that there's a better than average use of grains domestically, both for feed and ethanol, over the first quarter of the year?
Up front, there has been, especially the livestock guys have been putting on extra pounds. You know, it just seems like a few years ago, guys were getting docked for too heavy animals, but man, the heavier they are, the better they are. Then the phenomena of the ethanol, you know, just shipping ethanol out underneath the radar on exports, you know, that's been a strong market for us there. But no, this first quarter usage is going to be strong. The end users was wanting to take advantage of the wide basis to gather some inventory. They've been under the gun for the last couple of years to make sure they got some ample inventory to work with. And that probably explains the lack of deliveries here for the December futures. They're just, you know, using it up and through here, and we'll probably see the delivery process pick up steam as we go in to 2015.
Wayne Nelson, we have been talking just a bit about total usage, a lot about the export market, and then, of course, you mentioned the Chinese importing DDGs. Do you think they'll open the marketplace up to more DDGs from the United States? And is that happening simply because of an overabundance, I suppose, of boxes ready to be shipped back to China that are now empty or will be shortly after the Christmas season?
That's one of the big things, Todd, but I think mainly it's some moldy, out-of-condition corn that they'd like to have some good product to blend with over there for their feed areas and feeding their hogs and what's going on also. I do think that they're going to probably have probably already contracted with one or two of the major grain companies to do some of this, and it's going to be mainly done with them. And, you know, the thing, but I don't think they're going to clear the MR-162 because that's just too doggone handy from whether they get in trouble, they have bought too much or whatever, to sort of shut the door when they want to on this corn business.
That will lock up the western United States, I would think, for some time then. They've had trouble moving corn and DDGs both out of that area because of the MRI-162. Does that give you hope for those in the middle part of the country that the export market will continue to strengthen their basis through the winter months?
Well, I think it's going to depend a lot on farmers and their holding patterns here. If they're a stubborn holder, and, you know, we're getting up here prices, you know, as we're looking here, we're awfully close to $4 here that way. And if we get a little plus basis, I think when corn gets between, $4.20 or so cash or above that, well, I think the farmer doors are going to swing open and they're going to be willing sellers of some corn here. And that's going to be the main thing, is getting the farmers to let loose of it, because there's plenty of corn out there. It's just getting in the right hands.
All right. You did mention the $4 level. When we recorded this on Thursday afternoon, corn had gone to $3.90, 90 and a half, actually, on its high for the trade for the day after the settlement price. Just 9.5 cents away from the magical $4 mark, but corn producers would like to have $4 cash. Can they pick that up anyplace yet, Matt?
Well, you know, they can pick it up at the processor. I mean, it's pretty tough to pick it up out in the country. I mean, I really haven't heard anybody out in the country been able to bid like that. But, you know, whenever you get, for instance, a couple of the bigger processors in our area are bidding at least 10 over posted bids, so 10 over the March. And so, you know, you'd be looking at basically a 408. And I've heard that there's been a little bit of more push, you know, depending on where you're at. But as far as in our neck of the woods, that's about as best as what I could get a guy.
This is the mark that producers have said, I want $4 corn again. But they tend to say they want $4 corn and then not make the decision to sell, right?
Surely not.
So the question is, well, they want $4.25 corn. That's not really the question. The question is, when we get $4 cash corn, should they be willing to open the bin door, and how much should they market? And I'd like each of you to take that up. Wayne, why don't we start with you?
Well, the easy answer to that is, Todd, If they filled their bins clear full, like most everybody did this year because they used every ounce of storage they had, they need to open the bin doors enough to core their bins and get them cored out here before too long, just for good safety practices as far as blending the corn and not letting it go out of condition. So I think everybody should do at least that much. And depending on where you are on marketing, you know, you could go up to 10% sold here right now before the end of the year if you get that opportunity.
Kirk Kimmel?
Well, it just depends, you know, how far along are you on the marketing. You know, there's some guys been fairly aggressive, and there's others that's not sold a whole lot. But, you know, we like getting up to over 50% priced here this winter. If you look at the July futures, you know, this 410 to 415 area is not bad. You can get on that 420-25 area and, you know, set on and wait for the basis to work for you, especially here in the east. I think there's some advantage to taking a look at that. And, you know, the funds want to continue to buy, or the weather in the southern hemisphere turns bad, you do some replacements on paper. If we have a substantial rally, it's going to be on paper versus cash. They'll widen the basis back out on you.
And Matt Bennett.
Yeah, I agree pretty much with what Kurt was saying as far as, you know, on paper, go ahead and replace. And I think my opinion on the market is, you know, we've had such a big run up here in the last couple of months that, you know, we were sitting here in early October, you know, and guys were, you know, pretty worried about sub $3 cash corn that was going on in places. And, you know, so whenever we get this kind of rally, I don't think it does us a whole lot of good unless we at least do something with it. And a lot of it, as these two guys say, a lot of it really is heavily dependent on where a guy is at this stage of the game. But depending on, you know, in my opinion, no matter how much corn you've got, if it's at the elevator, I'm looking at selling a pretty good chunk of it at this point. And then I personally would like to re-own, you know, I think the most bullish part of the corn market is looking at D15. So I would be looking at like a short dated call option to make replacements, because I feel like that's where you could get the most upside move.
Wait, how did we go from really bearish in 2015 to the most bullish part of the marketplace is December 2015? What? How did that happen, Matt?
I'm saying the most bullish part of the corn market.
I know.
Okay, and so what I'm saying is whenever I'm looking at corn, you know, I can't get real friendly on the nearby, on the cash, because we do have, obviously, a very big crop, as Kurt was saying earlier. I mean, it's the biggest crop we've ever produced. But we also have to understand that there's a lot of people, not only in the U.S., but in the world, that are talking about constricting their corn plantings. And if that ends up being the case, and we all know that basically everyone you listen to is saying that, if we come in with 86 or 7 million acres here next spring, I think that it gets you in a very tight situation if you end up having any weather issues at all. So I think that if there's going to be a rally, I can't imagine it's going to come in the, you know, in the cash or the nearby near as much as what it's going to come in looking at what we're looking at for prospects for 15.
Am I right in summarizing what you've said, I think, in that the most bullish part of a depressed market is December 2015?
For me.
For you.
Yeah, Todd.
Yeah.
If the corn acres planted go down 4 million acres from this year, and we have a 163 yield and everything is projected the same, the ending stocks for next year would drop to 1.12 instead of basically 2 billion. So that's what Matt's trying to say. I think there's going to be trying to buy acres.
Well, when you look at the spreads too, I mean, the July D spread into 15, D's is only 12 cent premium to the old crop. And the spec play is to be long D's, short July, with the idea that can move on out to 50, 60 cent spread.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned producer expectations going into 2015. Are they changing at this point, do you think, Kurt?
I haven't seen a whole lot. It's mainly corn on corn that I'm hearing here. I mean, you talk fringe areas and so forth, but it's depends what seed dealer you talk to, too. There's a certain company out there that's losing some market share, and you know, whether they're going to plant beans or go to another company, we'll see. But I think guys have really pushed the pencil and really considering this corn on corn ground, and I'm starting to believe they're going to follow through with it, especially with the late fall we had here. So there's some dynamics taking place here where we could see this March 31st planting intentions report be limit moves.
There's as we talk to corn salesmen out here, we're finding a lot of indecision on what they want to order. I don't think farmers made up their mind yet. I think they're sitting out here because they're not willing to commit to the seed orders that they generally have at this point in time, not knowing what they want to do. We're hearing a lot of farmers in the South are thinking of a little more Milo rather than the wheat they didn't get planted down there, going into Milo instead of wheat and double crop beans.
Do you suppose there will be much of a change in acreage, Matt, for next year in ratio, not in total numbers, but in corn to bean acre ratio?
Well, I think that you're going to be in a position to maybe plant a little more beans than corn next year. You know, I know a couple of years ago that would be something guys thought was crazy notion to even think about. But, yeah, I mean, in my opinion, I think bean acres are going to go up, and I think that corn acres are going to come back down some, depending on, you know, the situation. I mean, I've been in parts of the U.S., especially in the upper Midwest, where guys told me what their lack of profitability was, and I'm talking losing a decent amount of money per acre planting corn, you know, in areas where they're very diverse. And I know that seed sales in that neck of the woods are just pretty lethargic compared to what they usually have been. And so, you know, I definitely don't want to mince words here. I think that, you know, corn plantings are going to come down unless we see a big run up in prices. And I think the bean acres are going to be the partial beneficiary.
Is it the lesser of two evils? Because it simply seems if we have a 410 million bushel carryout, which is what USDA is now projecting, and we get a crop every 6 months, that that carryout, which is, well, 3.5 times or more what we have been using in the last or carrying out in the last 3 or 4 years, seems to be under a lot of pressure and should be pretty bearish.
Yeah. I mean, Todd, I think the thing that we have to understand is, you know, whatever ratio you want to use, 2.2 or 2.3 to 1, you have to understand, you know, with input prices where they're at, and basically we're looking at fertilizer prices that are as high or higher than they were last fall, and we're looking at a fall new crop bid, whether it was during the harvest even or now. I mean, now it's obviously came up some. It's a fair amount lower than what it was last year, you know, and so input prices are the same, and we haven't heard of a whole lot of seed companies going out there and lowering prices substantially. So, you know, with a fairly high input cost, I think that ratio is maybe just a little bit distorted because it's so much cheaper to put beans out there. And, you know, when you still lock in $10 on the board, it's pretty tough for me to say that guys can't at least make some money there.
Are you of the same opinion, Wayne?
I think that we're going to see some switching of acres. I think we will have more bean acres. I think depending on how this market reacts, if we can get the corn back up to, say, 450 basis the December 15, all those acres that are being talked about switch won't be switched.
Why is it, Kurt, that the export market for soybeans remains so very strong?
Well, it's strong just due to logistics. It's seasonal too up front here. It's front end loaded. Always has been front end loaded. If you're Asia, it's, you know, you're done southern hemisphere. Now you're moving the northern hemisphere. They're going to be moving corn next. Then they need to get those boats down there ready to take care of what's coming out of the southern hemisphere in a hurry. So it'd be interesting to really visit with some of those guys that manage that, if they would, because there's a fine art to it. You got to keep those suckers moving 24/7, and you know, we'll pick up Spasian business late in the marketing year, but it's just going to be catch up needs as we've seen in the past.
What is your view on the January numbers as they come out for soybeans on total crop size? Will that change, do you suppose, and whether that's acreage or yield adjustment or a combination?
Well, we could probably lose 500,000 acres harvested on the beans. I don't know if the bean supply-demand balance sheet is going to change a whole lot in proportion to what maybe the corn supply balance sheet could change, but I think it's going to be on harvested acres.
Is there anything that the market seems not to be catching in large part, that might drive consumption of soybeans even higher than it already is at this point?
There must be, but I don't know what they are. You know, but I think the one thing that we've all been trying to figure out a lot is, Todd, is what are those reasons? One of the things is we seem to be exporting a lot of meal or more meal than usual because Argentina farmers are holding their beans quite tightly. They're not exporting the meal that they generally do this time of year, so we're picking up a few more loads there. Some logistics problems and slowness out of Brazil on some of their meal. So we are picking up from some of the European countries that generally wouldn't be buying from us, and I think that's doing it. We seem to have a problem over here. We had at least 10% better yield than ever, and we had probably 5 to 8% more acres of beans in a 100-mile radius over here. And yet we're seeing some of the bean plants still bidding very, very aggressively and saying they're having trouble buying beans. So we don't know where they're at and who's holding them because there's a lot of farmers that are out of beans over here.
Two things I can throw in here is one is the energy, cost of energy is going down. It's going to free up more disposable income, and ideas are guys, gals, and everybody go out to eat more and maybe spend more on the food side of the budget. Then secondly, sort of quoting David Hightower mentioned in a phone conference yesterday that one of these companies has pretty well nailed down a pill that you can take. You can take it, eat all you want, not gain weight. So steak for everybody, I guess.
What do you think, Matt?
Well, I think, you know, this. I mean, if you're perplexed on why beans are doing what they're doing with the market, then I'm right there with you. It's been pretty interesting, obviously, the soy meal discussion. I mean, that's gotten a little bit as far as getting into the Southeast and the logistics of that. You know, that's a fairly mature discussion, but obviously it kind of set the tone for us this fall. And then, you know, moving forward, you know, exports have been just phenomenal. Export sales and shipments have been quite robust. And, you know, I think that moving forward, a person's got to ask themselves, you know, what's the upside on this market? And, you know, if you'd asked me what the upside on the market was before the rally, I would have said not very much. So maybe I'm not the guy to ask, but in my opinion, after seeing this sort of a rally, I just, I'm running out of bullish arguments to make. And, you know, I don't know exactly what this is all stemming from, but I know as a producer what it does to your bottom line. I think that's the main thing we've got to ask ourselves for guys that are trying to sell their production is that, you know, how does this affect my profitability? And can I stand for the market to reverse itself? Because you can take that $1.70 and you can take it away in two trading sessions pretty quickly, the way beans can move in this day and age. So, you know, I certainly don't want guys to get lost on that and don't fall asleep on the market because, you know, if you want to go ahead and hold on or not make very many 15 sales, that's fine. But, you know, get some protection underneath the market.
How much?
We're with my guys that are aggressive. We are 100% protected on 15 beans, and then some guys are 50% protected on 16. Now, you know, we're leaving the upside open on a good portion of those, but I've got some guys that are very aggressive that are saying, you know what, I can make money here, and I'm going to lock it in. Worst case scenario is I've got a floor under me. Best case scenario is it rallies.
Kurt, how about you?
Yeah, we've done a lot of marketing in the 15 Novies. In fact, we've moved into using the 15 bean as a corn hedge, kind of staying open on the corn. We've done a lot of different strategies where, you know, you put that price floor under you and you leave the upside open. There's cases where we've got some strategies on for 15 to 20 cents to pick up $1, $1.20 to the downside. So there's a lot of risk reward in the marketplace, but we feel the most reward is in the 15 being short. A lot of leverage there. You know, 15 beans could break, you know, a buck. The corn could probably only break, you know, versus 20 cents. So to have a hedge on for the most bang for your dollar, we feel that's the place to be.
Are you in agreement with this one, Wayne?
You know, we were fairly aggressive marketing run when we got to $10 and above. We're sitting back waiting a little bit now. But, you know, like we said, we look out there and we see that there's just an awful lot of acres of beans coming on for next year. and it's going to be awfully hard to go a lot over 1050.
Thank you so much for taking the time with us. Let's get a final word from each of you. Wayne Nelson, we'll start with you.
Well, Todd, I think that next week we're going to have the Chinese delegation in town. I think it's probably going to create a rally that, out of the enthusiasm from everything, it looks like another good reason to take advantage to buy some of those puts the other guy's been talking about.
Wayne Nelson, of course, is with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Kurt Kimmel is with Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois. Your final thoughts, Kurt?
Well, the time guys, the guys that do cyclical work and time cycles, are projecting a grain high by the 15th, 16th of next week. So that'd be interesting to watch, see if the thing kind of stalls out ahead of year end during that time frame. But the main thing is, it's been a fantastic, enjoyable year, and wish everybody a good holiday season over the next couple of weeks.
And Matt Bennett.
Yeah, I think this rally has been one that has been quite a blessing to all of us, and I would like to do whatever we can do to lock in as much of that as we can, make ourselves just a little more profitable and not fall asleep on the 15 markets, and wrap it all up. I just want to say I hope everyone has a great holiday.
Matt Bennett is with Channel Seeds from Windsor, Illinois. That wraps this edition of Commodity Week for the 11th day of December. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Please do visit our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our daily agricultural programming.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.